I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Angelina from Dunstable, and you're listening to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, what's the most useless talent you have? Okay, here comes the show. And remember, question everything.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast where myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dame Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer,
hello,
and a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we are talking everything from...
Well, we are talking everything from Angela from Dunstable's question. What's the most useless talent you have, Dane? I've got a few. I don't know what yours... What's your
is
top?
Is there such a thing as a useless talent?
I can tell you that I can bend my finger back far, and that's kind of almost like mini contortionist skills.
That's useful. That's no. Like a fresh shot. Think about Howard. I'm gonna give you the scene, right?
Mm.
Question Everything, the best podcast, basically on the waves, becomes way too political for the powers that be liking. Suddenly, you are kidnapped in an extraordinary rendition, and you're sent to a black site. They're like, we're going to start with your fingers, Howard. We want to know what he knows. And you're like, go ahead.
What about you, though, Dan? You must have a useless talent, I'm sure.
I mean, I think I have several useless talents, but can any talent be considered useless?
No.
You know, even the most useless talent it may have a use at some point.
You can pick up stuff with your toes, can't you?
Yeah, I can pick up like pound coins and stuff with my toes, which I guess
that's
is not
pretty cool.
That useful in the advent of like magnets and, you know, backs that allow you to bend down and pick them up. Also, I could also like lick a knife and eat with a knife without cutting my tongue.
Okay. Okay, so you've got knife skills and feet skills. Okay, well...
It said useless, Howard.
I'm aware. I'm not mocking you. I'm just letting you know. Listen, Angelina, hello from Dunstable. Thank you for your question. Hope that answers it. Listeners, let us know your useless talents. And suffice to say, on this podcast, we ask and answer all the questions, don't we, Dane?
Absolutely. Answering all the questions on this podcast might be one of the most useful talents we have on this show. So if you do like the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify and you'll never miss an episode. Or subscribe to us on Acast, the world's biggest podcast network, where you can hear all the questions being answered by our very special guests. And with that being said, on today's show, our guest is a British Labour Party politician. She is currently a Member of Parliament for the constituency of Brent Central in London. She was the first elected black female government minister in the UK, a passionate campaigner for young people. She's an honorary vice president of the British Youth Council and was chair of the all-party parliamentary group on youth affairs. And last year, she was named in Vogue's top 25 women shaping 2020. Naturally, if you don't know, she ain't here to wait on you guys. Please welcome to the show MP Dawn Butler.
Hey, hi guys, how you all doing?
We're good. Are great. Dawn, listen, you're the first politician that said yes. We've tried to get politicians, because this is a political show many times, and we don't get, you responded to us, so thank you.
Oh, absolute pleasure. But I mean, some politicians are scared, aren't they? I'm not scared. You can ask me what questions. I can even tell you my useless talent is that I can cross all my fingers at the same time.
That's kind not of a useless, useless talent.
Really. I mean, it's like, there's no reason why I need to do this, but yeah.
You say that, Dawn, but I want you to think, all right, it's me, you and Howard. We're back at the Temple of Doom. They've captured Indiana Jones. Now they need some weird alien technology handprint to open this chamber where Indiana Jones is being kicked. My big old five stubby fingers can't do it. Howard can't either. Can we find someone who appears to have some kind of quasi-Vulcan ancestry to open the door? That's where MP Dawn Butler comes in.
Now Indiana Jones is like that.
See,
I like the way your brain works, Dane. I like it.
That's it. There's nothing useless about having a talent. I think, you know, people should never consider it to be useless. And I think that's a great talent. It's gonna. Don't worry, it'll come in handy one day. And you'll be like...
I hope so.
I'm glad.
I know.
So first of all, Dawn, again, I have to, as well as Howard, thank you so much for being on the podcast. As we said, it's rare that we have politicians that are willing to engage with audiences and speak to the laity like yourself. So thank you very much. Just to give you an idea of how significant your appearance is, we said to Katie Hopkins, come on then. And she said no twice. So, so we appreciate it. How is life going for you as a parliamentary representative post lockdown in this new world?
I mean, it's intense, right? This has been a really intense, 1.5 years, really, yeah. I think. Or is it it's been so intense. So the work hasn't stopped. Everything's been done on Zoom. It's really interesting. You know, so many people have lost their lives. There's all these debates around vaccinations. All of a sudden, everyone wants to know what's in a vaccination. So it's been a really intense time and a really sad time for many people. And then you balance that with how communities have got together and how people have connected and, you know, how people are listening to podcasts more, you know, and that's why your podcast is doing so well, because people are finding comfort in just listening to other people talking. And so there's lots of different things that have come out of this. And then also, I think it's really shown us just how much a corrupt government can get away with when we're in a pandemic.
Yeah, well said. Very
definitely.
Well said.
I mean, you know, they're just trying to, whilst we're all focused on surviving and, you know, protecting our loved ones, this government has just been siphoning off money and giving it to their mates, thinking that we wouldn't notice. And I just think slowly people are beginning to wake up and say, hang on a minute, what do you mean you gave £1 billion to your mates? What do you mean? What do you mean you spent £14 million on an app that you've now scrapped? You know, how is that even possible? Yeah. You know. So I think slowly things are coming out, and people do care. I mean, even though, you know, you've got the BBC and ITV saying nobody cares. Nobody cares about, you know, the Prime Minister and his fiance spending £840 on a roll of, a roll of wallpaper. I mean, people do care who paid for it.
Wait, hold on. He's still with the fiance. Still done. Even after the woman came and said, yes, I was having sex with him and he was giving me government money for my business that no one's ever heard of. He's still with the fiance. And
She ain't going nowhere.
And the other baby mamas?
Well, how many baby mamas? Can you imagine, Dave? Can you imagine if he was a black man going into number 10 and they say how many? Can you imagine?
Imagine if Boris Johnson was the representative for Brent Central. They'd be like, well, typical. He's got three baby mothers and domestic abuse. Well, we can imagine who he is. And then his blonde man shows up and goes, actually, they'd be like, well, this is not the Brent we envisioned. So, imagine.
I know. Baby mothers, and he gets away with it. Like, how many kids have you got? Well, I can't remember. What do you mean you can't remember?
And they're not even allowed a name. You know what, Dawn? I'm just saying, you know that kid Calvin Johnson, who's the mixed race kid who denies racism exists in the UK? I'm just saying,
yes.
I've never seen him and Boris in the same room, but I'm just saying, not to bring up old memories, but I won't believe it until I see a birth certificate.
Well, on that bombshell,
Calvin Johnson is a half black man who does not believe in racism, and Boris Johnson hides his children. It all adds up. I want to see a birth certificate.
On that bombshell, Dane, I think it's probably best we have a question, as the format of this show dictates.
Absolutely. So as to avoid any accusations of gender. Dawn Butler, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. And we invite you to ask the first question, which we'd like to discuss for about 15 minutes or so. Not Prime Minister style, but just normal, regular questions. Any question you would like, of no matter what topic or what taboo you consider, you can discuss it. And then we'll do that for 15 minutes. And then Howard will ask a question, which we'll discuss for 15 minutes. And I'd like to pose a question to you for the final 15 minutes. And then if you could let our good listeners know where they can find out more about the current work you're doing as far as the youth service and just working as a civil servant, and just maybe just to advise and enlighten our listeners as to best use their vote while we still have a democratic society. So how does that sound?
I think that sounds spot on. And you're absolutely right about whilst we've still got a democratic society, because, you know, they're trying to change it.
Well, there you go. So with that being said, the floor is open for you to ask the first question, please.
So my first question is, on the 6th of May, we are going to have elections, mayoral elections in London. And this is sort of the first time where it's almost a secret election. Like, it's not really being spoken about much.
Not really.
Lots of people don't even realise that there is an election. I mean, my mum called me this morning and she's like, "Dawn, they say we have to vote for more than one president." You know, she was like, "What is this? Who am I voting for?" And I thought, this is really a big deal. Like, this is a big election for London, and people don't know, and they don't know how to vote. And lots of people are going to have a postal vote for the first time. Lots of people won't have left the house in 12 months, and you know, they're expected to go and vote. I mean, are people talking about the election? Do they know how they're going to vote? Do they know who the candidates are? So my question is that.
And the thing that's so interesting about this, and listen, Dawn, maybe in a year or 6 months' time, come back on and we'll talk about how it went. because you know, the nature of this election is so, like you say, it seems such an unimportant thing in the, you know, what you know, go on the big newspaper headlines. It's not there, right? It's not a thing. But it obviously is important. Why would you, if you were trying to explain to someone why it's so important, this election, why does it matter so much?
Because it's the future of London, what London's going to look like, how we're going to act like, whether you're going to have somebody who's going to buddy up, you know, with this government that's the most right-wing draconian government that our country that's ever going to be in my lifetime, and I think this country's ever seen, that's trying to take away every single democratic right that we have.
Listen, this current government, if Charles Dickens saw this, he'd be like, "Bro, man can't write this. It's a bit much."
Exactly. They'll be like, "No way. This dystopian future." It's like, are you kidding me? I mean, if you're, you know, one of the things that, and I mentioned the other day that is a rumor, but somebody has seen it, but they've told me, but it's alleged because it's a rumor and they could change their mind. It's like, if you're 30 or under, you will need to have 2 negative COVID tests, and then you would need to apply for a freedom pass to essentially leave your house, you know, and go and do things. I mean, what? You know, we need somebody who's going to stand up for London. You know, we need somebody.
Strange behaviour from a constituency where the leader of their party is still not au fait with the use of condoms. But because we don't know, he doesn't know how many kids he has. So,
well, exactly. I mean, and also, you know, can you imagine? He gave our Prime Minister gave £126,000 of public money to his, would you call her?
Side chick? Like
side chick. To his side chick. Nobody cares.
Or mistress if you're Generation X or older.
Yeah. Nobody cares. You know, and she came out with we were having an affair for 4 years. I didn't even read about it. It's like, really? How can all of this happen and nobody cares? Why doesn't anybody? Well, actually, that's a lot. I think people do care. And I know that it's been hard and there's so many things, you know, that's happening. But I just think, wow, we need to make sure we use our vote wisely on the 6th of May.
The bit that kind of complicates it, and I'm sure, Dane, you got a lot to say about this, it's just that, you know, you kind of, I definitely think we've entered an era where people maybe aren't as disenfranchised as they potentially once were. I think there was a sense of now that people have slightly, not everyone obviously, but slightly become politicised in an era where there were things to politicise them, like Brexit, which, like it or lump it, it definitely politicised some people and got them in talking about stuff. You know, whether he had anything to do with how our country's run, Donald Trump definitely put people on one side of a conversation or the other. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that manifests itself in a scenario like this, where it isn't as politicised as and kind of polarised as that. But obviously the options still feel that way, right, Dane? As in, if you ask one of our listeners whether they voted Tory or Labour, you're going to have an opinion about them based on whether, not necessarily local issues, right? You always have a sense of where their perspective is on the world right now, right, Dane?
Yeah, I mean, I would take into account when you are contemplating the factors that can affect political awareness, definitely don't leave out social media, particularly the actions of, you know, data miners like Cambridge Analytica. So far as awareness now, you have to contextualize that along the lines of the collective digital consciousness of people, particularly with algorithms. So it stands to reason, Dawn and Howard, I believe that there is a concerted effort with commercial interests to distract people from issues like the London mayoral election, especially because this election is the first time I've seen where there was one drill artist, Drillminster, who was a candidate, and there's a YouTube influencer whose name escapes me, who's actually also applying to become London mayor, as well as Lawrence Fox, I believe, is campaigning for London mayor as a part of the Freedom Party. And I feel that people have a rudimentary awareness of it, but I think there are several machinations that are taking place, both from the existing government as well as the lobbyists that support the existing government, that are deliberately causing this stratification and distraction for people so they don't have any awareness of it. So I think the short answer I would say is that I think people do care about the mayoral election, but I think that when you juxtapose the status of London mayor versus, you know, constituents within parliament, industrialists that are involved in the way London is run, I think a lot of people see the position of London mayor as being relatively impotent. I don't think people really see especially because, I mean, wasn't Boris Johnson the mayor before he became prime minister?
He was.
I mean, so then I would imagine that the state of the office has been left in considerable amount of disrepair since. It might be the extent where people are like, oh, well, if Boris can do it, why do we even care? And maybe some of his supporters argue that now that the former mayor is now in a ministerial position, he could probably affect more lasting changes. But I would argue if someone's going to put bikes all over your city and not have those bikes come with helmets, they don't really give a fuck about you. Because why would you make bikes without helmets? I guess that's why you make children without protection. But
but you know what scares me about that, Dan, is that the thing is that they're busy distracting people that will vote sort of Labour.
Yeah.
Whilst they'll make sure, on the other hand, that they're galvanising their people
always
to vote Tory. And then the next thing you know, we run the risk of having a Tory candidate who's going to literally destroy our city. And I say that not with any glee, you know, because I love London. I am a Londoner through and through. I was born in London. I love London. But I worry about what they would do if they got their hands on our city and they're in government. I mean, it's a real huge worry.
I'd be very worried. I think we should already be worried. Like, London is still the economic centre of the UK. A third of the UK's residents commute in and out of London in order for them to support that system. Now, the way I see it, the foreboding is that, as you said, if we do just kind of allow for this, for that Tory presence to be with a part of the London mayoral candidacy as well, then you may see instances whereby social services, youth services, health services that have already been affected by austerity could see themselves being completely eroded. I was in central London yesterday and I was thinking, oh, you know, lockdown was cool because it allowed for wildlife to flourish. But then I also remembered that you're no further than 6 feet away from a rat in London, and in with a government that has repealed pest control and is, you're not really even keeping commercial businesses particularly buoyant at the moment. That is very worrying. I find it very worrying, even with the current mayor and his building of these ULEZ zones. I mean, it's all very nice, but at the same time, you know, the UK has already said goodbye to large swathes of its automotive industry due to Brexit and due to outsourcing. The petrochemical industry, which is dotted throughout the UK, will obviously be disproportionately affected by this. And also the fact that I think it's a short-term solution to try and boost the coffers of Transport for London, because you have a government that refuses to subsidise a service which is required for all of London. And so they've had to try and alleviate that cost against, the consumer, who itself keeps London kind of ticking and thriving. I just think that there's been some very short-term solutions or some band-aids putting on some gaping wounds within London. Mm. And yeah, I agree with you. I think if people were aware of the policies that this government may have, but then what you have is the problem is people don't care, because what you have is a ongoing narrative from mainstream, particularly tabloid media, that keeps reinforcing this idea that London is this hotbed of debauchery, iniquity and youth violence. And so people are so focused on what appear to be solutions to remedy these things that they're not really focusing on infrastructure and continued economic prosperity and sustainability. And, you know, all the things that would make London the great city it's supposed to be. Like, I find it strange that, you know, in a country where, you know, power and access to power is sparse, you have someone who is openly campaigning to make it a more ecological environment. Well, why don't any government buildings have solar panels?
Dawn, do you yeah. think that what do you think this campaign, this election will be won on? What if you were thinking of what would be the defining kind of factors, what do you think will lead to the victories?
What I'm hoping for is that it will be won on Sadiq's record as mayor of London and all the good. I mean, he hasn't done everything right, but it, you know, it's in the right direction. So I'm hoping that people will see what he's done in regards to, you know, cleaner air, in regards to investing in youth services. So I'm hoping that that will be what people go out and vote for. What I'm worried about is this Trump style campaign that the Tories are running. You know, they're really running it. You know, if you're on Facebook, they're targeting you with these horrible messages. You know, it's very much about sowing division. You know, they say that, you know, we're talking about a culture war when it's them. They're the ones that are trying to create this culture war. And it's, you know, they're just gaslighting you. They're like an abusive partner, you know, and you really have just got to like cut them loose and let them go, really.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, remove the heads of this government. Like, if the conservative narrative is about like lower taxation and supporting a free economy and having holding on to conservative beliefs, then the leader of your party cannot be a man with three baby mothers who steals.
Yeah, absolutely. It's shocking.
Even if you do adhere to all of the tenets of land and title and ownership and free and a free economy and low taxation, you know, and the quasi-republican values that we know a lot of people have, maybe I can't change those in a day. That's fine. But that person cannot be the best of you. A man that is questioned about his constituency or his ministerial status, who jumps in a fridge, yeah, is not someone that I would trust. If I went to see an oncologist and I asked him for the results of my biopsy and he jumped in a fridge, I would not have confidence in him.
No, it's not a great sign, is it, really?
No.
They're not feeding your children. I'll say it again if you're listening. They're not feeding your children. 140 million track and trace. They are not feeding your freaking kids.
Yeah, can you imagine? Can you imagine having a debate on whether children should go hungry in our country?
Right.
How can we have a debate about that? Can you imagine saying to them, how comes you gave £13 million to a pest control company to provide us with PPE and they didn't do it? Where's the money
gone? Even though you removed pest control from the government in the first place.
Exactly.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, £126,000 for a woman to go away and not even come back with a breast implant, Dawn. The brooms are still 40 years old.
It's mad.
And the idea that even, I think that one of the things that constantly puzzles me is, you know, when you kind of see, how many people seem to not see through the lack of integrity? That's the bit that kind of upsets me. And I don't know.
You said, Howard, that's why, because you just watched a man who said he grabs women by the pussy be a president for 4 years. Integrity is over. You just saw Prince Andrew sit on TV and be like, yeah, I don't sweat. So
I know.
That's why.
But they're testing us. See, I think it's a test.
Yeah.
You see, I think, I remember reading about, you know, these social experiments where they test, but they drip feed people bullshit to see how much of it you will take before you turn around and say, well, actually, hang on a minute, you're not going to kid me anymore. And I think that's what it has been. I think it's been like a drip thing. And I think it's time for people to kind of wake up and say, hang on, I'm not going to allow you to do this. And as soon as, you know, whenever I question you, you run in a fridge, as you say, Dane, or I question you, they say, but I'm standing by a union, Jack. That means that I'm patriotic. You know, but you're not feeding our kids, but I'm standing by a union, Jack. So that means, but you're not looking after our veterans, but I'm standing by a union, Jack.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, we've got to call out the bullshit.
It's almost like the power of, I always listen to some of these kind of conversations, Dawn, and think about the power of Putin. And how Vladimir Putin's impact on the world, and how a lot of people have looked at that guy and gone, seems to be kind of working out for him. And, you know, he is a man who has sown confusion and distraction tactics.
Yeah, because he was trained by the secret police. So for him to be employing KGB tactics should not be surprising to anyone. Mm. But by the same token, it's like, you know, where people say he's getting away with it, Russia, you know, has its own internal issues. And I mean, Russia's economy collapsed years ago, years and years and years ago. So even though people think they're prospering, there is a massive underclass within Russia that you just don't really see. What, and it's funny, even when you talk about the UK, and one of my fears for London is that essentially we're going to have an aesthetic, which is, or a landscape, economic landscape, very similar to France, in that you may have a city of wealthy oligarchs and millionaires and billionaires. And in the suburbs, you're going to have people that have been reduced back to like Cameroon style rural living. That's how far we're going. And the people that might be like, that sounds extreme, they're not even feeding your children. Even if you are someone who holds onto these ideals and these tenets of a free economy and deregulation, you gave your money to bankers. Yeah. That made you preferential shareholders. If they're reporting profits as preferential shareholders, you should be getting the dividend. So at the very least, if you believe in a tenet that you support this idea of economic deregulation, where are our dividends?
That's why we can't. That's why we can't allow that. We cannot allow. You know, we cannot allow the Tories to win London. We just can't. We cannot. We can. We cannot. You know, we cannot. We cannot literally afford for that to happen. And that's why I just think it's important that everybody, if you're not, you know, if you're not registered for a postal vote, just go out and vote. Wear your mask. Wear your gloves. You know,
and,
go out and vote.
And I think to open up the show with that question is perfect, because it makes us feel like we're in a place of current discussion as this show comes out. And I think people can listen back to this episode after the election's over and make their own judgment on what we were saying and what happened. My question is another question about politics for you, Dawn, that really fascinates me, because I'm not a politician, and maybe one day Dane will be a politician, but I don't know.
I'd love to see that.
I don't know when it will happen.
We'll see how it goes for you, Dawn. I'm just following the inspiration.
Waiting his chance, really, to do it. But I was going to say that my question for you is about what people outside of politics, what do people outside of politics not understand about life inside politics?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It seems like such a exclusive world to us. You know, there's so few people who represent all these constituencies around the country, and yet we all have an opinion about what you're doing. You get crap from lots of different people from lots of different angles. What do we not understand about what it's like being inside it?
I mean, on that, somebody sent me an email, you know, complaining about the BBC coverage. And I'm like, that's just not my remit. Understand what my remit is. I can't get the BBC to cover stuff. But so what don't people understand? So sometimes that demarcation, people don't understand the demarcation between MPs and your local council. So that often gets confused. But I think within Parliament, you have, you know, the people in government, and you have government ministers, then you have MPs, then you have your opposition, and we're all on the other side. So we're all oppositions on the other side. You know, you've got your Labour, your SNP, your Lib Dem, you know, Northern Ireland, you know, you've got all of us on the opposition. And I think what is difficult sometimes to understand is that very few people make the decisions. And normally it's the Prime Minister and his cabinet that make the decision. this government has ensured it's literally just the Prime Minister and Dominic Cummings, but now he was on the inside of the tent. Now he's on the outside of the tent. And what they try to do, Boris Johnson, was to try and close down Parliament so that MPs, the rest of us, didn't even have a say in what they were doing. And that's what they tried to do. And what normally happens outside of COVID is that we get to question the Prime Minister and all these ministers on everything that they say, all of the policies, all of the legislation that comes out. What's happened since COVID is, and the COVID regulations, the new COVID 2020 Act, is that this government gave themselves unfettered powers to do whatever they want, when they want, without coming to Parliament. That is unprecedented, and it's dangerous because it means they can do stuff behind our backs and we don't even know. Sometimes we're just finding things out for the first time. You know, the government spent £400 million on something called OneWeb, which is they bought some satellites. Nobody knew about that. Found out by accident. The government are planning to give £800 million to a new science agency. They don't want us to know who's going to run it. There's not going to be any FOIs allowed. You know, the government decided that for COVID, they can fine people for being, you know, for walking outside. And they decided how much they were going to fine people. At one stage, they were saying you could be fined, it still is, up to £10,000, right? Now, this was under Section 21, I think it was, of the COVID Act. Every single fine that the police did under the Act was found to be unlawful in the court of law. So this is how dangerous this government is. This government is dangerous. And to be honest, you know, even Parliament, I've stood up time and time again, and even parliamentarians are just like walking blind into this. And I think it's because there are so many things happening. We're trying to tackle that sleaze and corruption, you know, that area of concern. So many, but you know, that tactic's been used all the time. So it is complicated to understand, but I think, yeah, there's a lot. And obviously there's the stuff that we work hard and people don't think that politicians work hard, but we do.
But because it's also the bit that's interesting to me is always the details, right? So like, you know, like, let's talk, I'll give an example of why I was so interested to kind of talk about this is like, I'd say, and Dane, you tend to back me up on this, that the climate emergency and the environmental emergency in our world is probably, if you're writing the list of important things, probably at the top, because if the world ends because the climate and environment is screwed, then that's probably not going to matter much about other things to do with economy and stuff if the world ends. Mm. You know, to actually make inroads into that one subject and kind of make change to how this country address it. Dane often talks about, how often do we talk about solar panels? You know, like
just sustainable and renewable energy. Like it, for me, it just seems paradoxical that you'd be trying to think about low emission zones and then not creating alternate energy sources, or the fact that, like, you know, the increase in, you know, cost to the power grid just by the merit of increasing populations, more movement towards London, or people moving out of London, which means you're going to have a more sophisticated grid that's going to be required, so we don't have to live in a state of constant blackouts like somewhere in the States or Nigeria at this point. So for me, and also it saves money for your government. If you have to have municipal buildings where you're able to have alternate energy sources, you're not as dependent upon providers of utilities and energy and power, especially when you're dealing with something like a NHS on the verge of being privatized, or dealing with, you know, infrastructure that has been affected by the pandemic. For me, it just makes more sense. Not only that, if you do introduce a scheme whereby you're trying to refine the infrastructure to make it more sustainable, you know what that's going to create? Jobs. For whom? The working class. Who people forget, the reason why they're called the working class, because they used to fucking work.
And the thing about it is just that therefore, this is a good example, right, Dawn? Like, that, you know, me and Dane, two blokes sitting here saying, well, why is there not solar panels everywhere? Why are there not solar panels? And it'd be interesting to hear your insight on why it's so hard to make something like that happen.
Because this government has decided, so we are now, 15 years behind where we should be, because when this government came in, they did absolutely because they were beholden to big money, mm-hmm. right? They did nothing in regards to sustainable energy. So all of the stuff around subsidies, for instance, for solar panels, this government decided to scrap all that and put the money elsewhere. So instead of us spending time looking at wave technology, you know, wind
farming,
instead of us committing to technology transfer of other countries, this government decided to scrap all that and focus on something completely irrelevant that doesn't help us with sustainability. And, you know, when I talked about this new science agency called ARIA that this government's invested £800 million to, we said to them, whatever ARIA does, it needs to be net zero in terms of like its emissions. So this is supposed to be a new science arm that's supposed to look at forward thinking technology, all the stuff, you know, that nobody else thinks about, all that big blue sky thinking, right? And we're like, okay, well, make sure whatever it is, you take into consideration that it's going to be net zero. They were like, well, that's why are you restricting what they can do? And you're thinking, hang on a minute, isn't that the most important thing facing us, you know, as a world going forward? Why would that not be part of the consideration? It makes no sense. But I think, again, it's down to follow the money. And you're right. Why shouldn't there be solar panels on every building? Not this, that. We had a strategy to ensure that all churches' roofs were replaced with solar paneling because a lot of the churches, for instance, were having their roofs nicked because it was lead-based, you know, sort of very random, I know. But anyway, so we were like, right, okay, let's have a policy so that all, and apparently back in the days, churches, but this is like really random nerdy stuff, but apparently churches were built all sort of south facing so they get a lot of sun, right? So if you solar panel the roofs of churches, we'll be able to generate a lot of electricity and build it back into the grid. The Conservative government just scrapped all of that, you know, no consideration. So you think, where's the forward thinking in all of this? There's no, they don't care.
Even just a slightly tangent off to the fact that the government said there's not any racism in this country, right? They did a report that said there was no racism in this country. And I feel like it would be rude to not bring this up because, I mean, we're on episode 100 and something of this podcast. I don't think this podcast would have made it this far if there weren't issues of racism in this country that we want to confront and discuss, and not necessarily just, you know, there is a culture of finger pointing through social media, and sometimes that's needed, but also just discursive, you know, conversations are needed. And how difficult did you find that report, Dawn? Must have just been bizarre.
I mean, if I'm honest with you, Howard, I can't even be asked to talk about it anymore. You know, as I say, this government is like an abusive partner. It's abusive. They're abusive.
One thing we can talk about is let's not even get into bemoaning the results of the report, Howard. Someone got paid, yeah, to go and carry that piece of paper and the photocopies and staple it together. That's what concerns me. Because if you're going to say that, why do it in the first place?
It's rude. I mean, it's rude. It's abusive, as I say. And as I said on the floor of the House in Parliament, this is national gaslighting by our government. You know, we've seen the hostile environment that this government has bestowed upon Black people from the Windrush generation. This is national gaslighting at a level. And they put their Black MPs to the front to talk about this with such passion, you know, and I felt shame and embarrassed, right? And I don't want to feel shame and embarrassed for this government, but I did in that moment. And let me tell you something, right? When we were in Parliament and we were discussing this report, I was watching Theresa May's face. And even Theresa May, who presided over the hostile environment, looked stunned what was coming out of the mouth of the minister. Even she looked exasperated and like, couldn't believe it.
I tried to diplomatically chat shit, but that's just openly chatting shit. That's why she's standing there, because for someone, she's like, but I've been there when you've said it.
Absolutely. And remember, the minister...
Anne-Marie Morris was one as well. That was one.
The Prime Minister himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Watermelon smiles. And also, for those of you who are my age, well, I'm sorry, but the 15 million McPherson report proved that there's racism, institutional racism.
Everyone knows there is. I mean, it's just, but that's the minister, the latest minister that left the government said that the government is a cesspit. And almost nobody tells the truth. And this is one of their own. He was inside that tent, has said that this government is a cesspit and almost nobody tells the truth. And there you go.
But in the reality of racism from, you know, look, I can talk about anti-Semitism, but I spend a couple of hours a week with Dane and get insight into certain elements of the issue that I might not understand. So I can give an opinion, but it's obvious. This is an international conversation. This is definitely, you know, racism is an international conversation. You can't, how often do we talk about America, Dane? You know, we don't live there, but how often do we talk about America? And you have to, it's so arrogant to think that Britain can just suddenly just cast its verdict on...
The thing is, an MP called Enoch Powell had a Rivers of Blood speech. Winston Churchill was known for quoting disparaging remarks about Indians during the famine. Now, we'd have to critique them, but it's like, even if you do hold patriotic ideas about the UK, you know what they did. Like, you know how involved Britain was in a Boer War to control South Africa and how much they supported apartheid and then through the economic sanctions led to the... We know this.
But doesn't it show you how arrogant the government is? They're so arrogant that they thought that everybody was such sheep that they thought they could just say to people... Racism, you know, institutional racism doesn't exist. And everyone will go, okay. They weren't really counting on people going, hang on a minute. You know, that's not true. That's not true. So maybe that was the thing that made people think, you know.
When a head of state climbs into a fridge, when I'm already paying for internal security from MI5, all bets are off. Because, I'm sorry, last time I checked, I pay for your security. Why are you jumping in the fridge anyway? Second of all, you can die jumping in a fridge. I mean, even you know you can die by jumping in a fridge. It's beyond arrogance and hubris. I just think it's just this clean, clean delusion. You have a head of the Home Office who is like, if my dad tried to immigrate here, I wouldn't let him. Then you wouldn't have your job. It's basic time travel understanding. If your dad was never here, it means you were never conceived in this country, which means you've never risen to power to even make that kind of legislation in the first place. That's like
but they're appealing to it's red meat to a certain group, and that's who they're appealing to. That's what it is.
Well, I think
that's what it is.
It's important to just say that to discuss it in the way we have, hopefully for the last 15 minutes or so, I think is vital because it's. I do think people should understand that the issues faced trying to make changes, and I know Dane's question feeds perfectly into what we've just been discussing, and so over to you, Dane, to kind of provide this final question for today's show.
Well, I think the question was conclusive for the audience, but I think you know what people don't understand about politics, whether it's positively and then the preconceptions they have positively and negatively, I think is largely down to a lack of awareness. I think, like I said. You pick up most tabloid newspapers and read it back. Most of the laity, most people could tell you the starting 11 for England's football team. If you put a gun to someone's child's head and said, you name me 11 members from the cabinet, they would not be able to do it. And I think that obliviousness is manufactured by mainstream media and other lobbyists that support government as it exists. But I say that to say this, Dawn, is that like, obviously, I'm aware of the work you do. I'm aware of people like yourself, as I was aware of, as I'm aware of David Lammy, as I was aware of Una King, who tried to get on the show before. But I think, you know, speaking from the perspective as a descendant of the Windrush generation and the diaspora, there's always been some element of detachment from bipartisan politics because of a collective feeling of disenfranchisement. But obviously people like yourself are actively working to empower people like myself and others on a larger scale. But I sometimes wonder how effective that is because there are obviously a massive amount of intersectionality of the diaspora, and there are We all have our collective needs, whether it's our needs for equality, opportunities for self-determination, opportunities for just civil and human rights within the UK, acknowledgement of discrimination. But I'm also aware that Black people, even by the nature of the members of the parliament that supported this, sit at different points of the bipartisan political spectrum. And in many ways, there are people I know who I would say might vote Labour, but in terms of their theological views and maybe their views towards capital gain, especially coming from historically impoverished communities, hold quasi-conservative views. But at the same time, our needs so far as being Black people are the same. So I guess my question is, would it serve, and I think someone may have asked this before, but I wanted your perspective, would it serve for there to be a Black political or voting caucus? And if not, are there elements of the of your party or politics in or just the political landscape in general that you think Black people would be, it'd be useful for us to identify with politically?
I think it's always powerful if there can be a collective voice on issues. Mm-hmm. So, and I think sometimes we don't collectively understand our power as, you know, as a voting block. I mean, there was something like, oh, I can't remember, 200 or so constituencies where, if all Black people voted one way, you know, you could swing that seat.
Yeah. And so people don't know this because I saw, you know, the guy, SPAC Nation, the head of SPAC Nation, Pastor Toby.
Oh, yeah.
He
yeah.
very recently put out a video where he was questioning why Black people don't vote. And I think he's doing that because he's making MPs aware that he's able to leverage Black votes via his church. Mm. And so trying to find out how people can incentivize him to direct his flock. Okay, because I would say that one of the biggest collective ideological movements that Black people are a part of would be more about Christianity and stuff. So, I just think, you know, like you said, are we aware of our power as a voting caucus?
Yeah, and also, like, for some people, so it was something like one in five Black people not registered to vote, but only, was that the right way? No, four in five Black people weren't registered to vote, something like that, but one in five white people. So there was a huge number of Black people not registered to vote. And sometimes I think people see it as part of the system and they don't want to get involved in the system.
Definitely.
And politics doesn't matter
And also because a lot of Black people are afraid that if they give over their voting registration details, they're going to have a bailiff at their door or a debt collector.
Yeah, stuff like that, like wanting to come, you know.
Manufacture poverty and stuff, and come off grid so they're not liable to like creditors and stuff.
Yeah, which isn't the case because, you know, you should register to vote and actually it helps your credit rating than anything else and it can't be used for anything else. And you can also come off of the electoral register so it's not public in the public domain. Some people say, oh, it doesn't bother me or it doesn't affect me, but absolutely everything that we do is affected by politics. Like there's nothing that you do in life and society from the moment you open the door, from the moment you wake up in the morning, everything
When your birth certificate is signed and your national insurance comes through, you're in the system.
Yeah, everything is political. And I just think, but I also understand like people being activists and not sometimes equating that activism to politics. And we've got to do better at, you know, making sure people understand that activism is politics and more welcoming. You know, politics needs to be more welcoming too. It needs to be more understanding. You need to have more politicians come on your podcast, for instance. You know, you need to have politicians that are all right. Just, you know, let's have a conversation. Let's speak. I mean,
and we'd welcome people on from any group. We would happily talk to a Conservative MP about issues that we might not agree on.
We'll be civil, but I can't say I'll be happy about it. But that's not what politics are, guys. It's not happy,
yeah,
happy
exactly.
Well, you've got to have discourse, right? Like, you know, it might be that we get to understand something that we don't always understand. I think that's one of the problems, isn't it, Dawn? That you seem to kind of end up with those kinds of issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And those people who, you know, yes, of course, I'm a Labour MP, I'm a Labour politician, but, you know, it doesn't mean that I always agree with the Labour's position on things, you know, so, and it's important for us to have that discussion and talk about that so people sort of understand, you know, what I'm about, you know, where my focus lies.
And have a larger understanding of how politics works. Just because you may be a member of a party doesn't mean you agree with every single aspect of it. These are the important things. And I think we have simplified political identity because of manipulation through social media. because we tend to see our ideological platitudes as binary of being either zero or one. I'm this or I'm this. And that's not how things work. Most people, this is where the historic existence of the term centrist was that we are aware that some people sat at different parts of the political spectrum. And the function of politics is to find a happy medium between all of these ideologies where we can all function as a society.
Absolutely. Like if you take, for instance, take the mayoral elections, right? Sadiq has been the most green mayor and he works with the Green Party on lots of issues. And so, you know, in this election, you know, it's like lots of people who would normally support Green will support Sadiq for the mayor. And then, you know, for the list, which is all the other assembly members, they will then support Green and then Labour, etc. And it will be sort of interchangeable. So that's why it's important. And it's important to work together on issues that we care about and believe in.
How can Sean Bailey say I was brought up in foster care and then represent a party that has eroded any care for foster care?
Well, you know, that
they turned their back on him anyway. So
yeah, whatever. I mean, well, that was interesting, right? That they they did that.
But not surprising. Not surprising.
No, of course not. Yeah, it didn't come to a surprise to me, or you might have come a surprise to him.
but it didn't. The rest of us, we weren't surprised. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
we saw that bus coming from a mile off before he stepped into it. But
yeah, absolutely.
It is a fascinating thought. Because I think in America, we always look at America, right, Dane? And, you know, kind of the politicization, of the black conscience in America, I think is growing. And obviously, you know, statistically, I think it's 3% of the British population is black. Is that right?
It might be bigger now. I think it might be 7% now. And I'm not sure if that's including people of dual heritage, depending on what application form you fill in. But I would say, because, I mean, there's been, you know, actually, with obviously Dawn's emergence as well and being very vocal about issues that pertain to the diaspora in the UK. But then also there was this very weird attempt to try and liken Chuka Umunna to Barack Obama. And he's now with the Lib Dems. So I think one of the reasons to ask the question.
I think Dane, he may have played a little role in that, but anyway, carry on.
Yeah, of course. I don't doubt that for a second. Because and that's the thing is that like when we consider people like Barack Obama, you know, you can talk to black people of a more liberal and sometimes conservative disposition, and the aesthetic of just having a black man in the presidency with a first lady also being of African American descent is enough for some people. But then there is a counter argument that I find, particularly from people that would be considered activists, who always hasten to remind me and other people that our more prominent socio-political leaders, the Martins, the Malcolms, et al., did not sit on either end of the bipartisan political spectrum. Now, I could argue that that's because at the time, those systems actively were marginalizing us. And so the opportunity for you to work within those systems to affect change wasn't possible. But at the same time, some people argue, like I said, I feel that maybe the needs of us as a people are very distinct from, there's a massive intersectionality, but there are distinct needs that are outside of the bipartisan political narrative. The second part of the question is kind of like, do you think is it about time that we can now sit comfortably and assert our spaces or our proverbial seat at the table within parliamentary institutions now? Or do you think there's still the merit of having a external or even maybe just a external body like the BNP or the NF that or the Green Party that can influence bipartisan politics, but with just the interest of the diaspora in mind?
Well, I think it's imperative that we are sat around the table. And as much as, you know, the likes of Kemi baffles me. I think it's important. honestly, I think it's important that you have representation in all political parties. But I also think that it's important that we understand that just because you're black and you have a certain lived experience, so Kemi can say, "I've never experienced racism," right? That's cool. If that's her lived experience, that's fine. But that is not equal, and you cannot give that equal weight to me who has experienced racism. So they're not, it's your lived experience, but it's irrelevant to the debate.
It's also anecdotal. And, so think, and Dawn, obviously I'm aware that you're a politician, you have to be diplomatic about it. Kemi, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish. You can find it on a fucking picture, you fucking idiot. You can find it on a picture. Even if you just Googled it, you could find it. Even if you Googled McPherson report, you could find it. There is historical basis to show you the existence of institutional racism. You can Google Sir Paul Condon, who is the head of the Metropolitan Police. You can Google these things. Like, there is no reason that you could make that assertion, even with your anecdotal evidence saying that I've never, because even you know there's a reason why they asked you to say it. Because really and truly, if they didn't exist, they would never ask you, Kemi, because up until this time, no one had heard of you. No one had even heard of you. So
none of them would have been able to stand and say it. But I mean, but I don't think, like, I know there was some people that have, like, that set up a, tried to set up a party just sort of black people kind of thing. Mm. I think, you know, people are free to do whatever they want to, but I don't think it would be very effective.
Mm. Yeah, it's tricky. Yeah, which is fair.
And, mm. I guess it's for the reason we discussed, is that, like, there is no unified relativity theory of relativity when it comes to blackness and our identity and what's good for us is good for others. Because, like you said, there are Kemi Badenochs out there who probably would have politically identify with a lot of conservative rhetoric because there's going to be some kind of economic or political or professional benefit to them. Mm. So, you know, I guess that kind of answers the question. It's not as straightforward as that. But then by that same token, I guess it's about if, however, wherever you want to sit on sit at the table, you should still aspire to be there.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. Very, very well said. And there's been many things very well said in today's episode, Dane. I would say, it was superb to have someone actively involved in politics on the show. We talk about it all the time, don't we, Dane? And Dawn has given a great account.
Absolutely. I think a lot of the time when you hear people opining on issues of this nature, then you're told to stick to politics. So we went to the effort of speaking to a credible actual politician. So what are you going to say now, everybody? Nothing, that's what. Dawn, I, again, genuinely, thank you so much for all the work you do. And I think a lot of people talk a lot. So actively being involved within the system and taking that step, whatever the outcome is going to be over the, you know, next 5 to 10 years, like, I want you to know that we celebrate your work. And yeah, please, could you just let listeners know, because, you know, not through any willful ignorance, may not be aware of the intricacies and nuances of the mayoral election. So if you could let people know what they could do to find out more, that would be great, please.
Absolutely, man. I just want to thank you guys as well, and I want to thank you for your work that you're doing, Dane, and, like, wishing you all the best with, like, your TV career as well. And I do hope that we can get you in Parliament, because actually we've got a deficit of black men in Parliament, and that's important. Yeah, but if people, yeah. Yes, totally. So, I mean, if people want to find out more, if people have got problems with their ballot papers, please contact their local authorities. Make sure that they're on the list that they're going to vote. They should have received a card, like, it's got a little gray bit on it that says take this with you to vote, but you don't need to take that with you to vote. You don't need no identification to go and vote, by the way, even though that's something else that this government is trying to bring in, that you need to bring photo ID to vote. Another thing that right-wing governments
coming from somebody who don't even know his own children, Rev.
Right. It's mad. It's absolutely mad. Absolutely mad. So, you know, 6th of May, just go down to your local polling station and vote. And and I'm Labour and I passionately believe in Sadiq and his work, you know, vote Labour, but obviously, you know. And if you need to know anything else, just contact the Labour Party, or you can go onto the Mayor's website and it gives you all the information there.
Brilliant.
Amazing.
It's been a joy, Dawn. I'm so glad we made this happen. It means, I'm sure to our listeners, it will mean something, because it puts this podcast in the kind of the current affairs of this country more, which we try and do, but they don't let us in enough. So,
right now, these are the questions that need to be asked, especially when people are having their awareness being obscured from them by the current existing government. Dawn, I just need you to know as well, yeah, if you get any Twitter trolls or anything like that, refer them to me. I've got all day for the smoke. I'm not limited to anything.
Spend the day on my timeline, Dane. Spend the day on my timeline, because they come out thick and fast.
But, leave it with me, madam. I will be your Twitter knight.
Thank you so much, Dawn. It's been great. Amazing.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at DaneBapTweets or Instagram at DaneSnapTeast. Our guest was Dawn Butler. You can follow Dawn on Twitter and Instagram at DawnButlerBrent. The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheHowardCohen. The show is mixed and mastered by Audio Culture. You can follow Audio Culture on Instagram at WeAreAudioCulture. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at DBQE Podcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly, and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys, and remember, question everything.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.